Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of
mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Taylor Quimby in for Virginia Prescott. From unanswered Facebook messages to commercials at the gas pump to the smartphones vibrating in our pockets, outside forces are constantly vying for our attention. In his book, The World Beyond Your Head, Matthew Crawford ponders distraction in the 21st century and ways to reclaim our focus. Matthew Crawford is a senior fellow at the University of Virginia's Institute for Advanced Studies in Culture and a motorcycle mechanic at the Reclaimed Vehicle Fabrication Lab. I spoke with him when the book was first released. It's now out on paperback. And Matthew Crawford, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me.
So it seems like this is, you know, an argument that we've heard before. First, it was, and this is quite a while ago now, radio is rotting our brains. Then it was TV is rotting our brains. Now people are saying the same sorts of things about social media. Do you think we are more distracted than we have been before?
Well, you're right. It's an old complaint. In fact, it was over 100 years ago that a German sociologist referred to what he called the intensification of nervous stimulation that he associated with the city environment. But yeah, so maybe this has been an ongoing thing, and I tend to think it's actually not so much the technology itself that's the source of this as the intention behind it. One way this really kind of came into focus for me was that when I was in the grocery store and I swiped my bank card to pay for groceries, and so you know how you enter your PIN code and
yeah, sure.
It's a pause, and then you confirm the amount. And so there's these little pauses. And during those pauses, I was shown advertisements.
Wow.
Because some genius figured out that a person in that situation is a captive audience. And so it just kind of, I started to see this everywhere, that there's this really aggressive effort to monetize our attention. And I think we're not yet very articulate about making a claim for our attention on our own behalf and regarding it as a resource. I guess speaking up for or against the kind of appropriations of our attention that have become pervasive.
Well, you said that it's not that technology is to blame. So what role do you think technology does play, and especially the stuff that people tend to complain about, social media, or smartphones?
Well, part of it is that a lot of this stuff seems to be engineered to tap into sort of mental appetites that are hardwired. So just as food engineers figured out how to create hyper-palatable foods by manipulating levels of salt and fat and sugar, some of these digital media seem to do something similar in that they're tapping into these hardwired appetites. So you might consider distractibility as the mental equivalent of obesity in terms of its kind of widespread societal effect.
You know, I wonder how much, we are sort of to blame. I don't mean to keep throwing around the blame word as though this is what we're trying to do. But I was thinking, you know, it seems that we seek out distraction on some level. You know, I will sometimes do everything in my power to remove distractions when I'm working on a project. And yet I will find some way, whether it's spinning a quarter on the desk in front of me, to keep myself from doing what I'm trying to do sometimes.
I think that's a really important point. It's not just that we have these unwanted intrusions. There's also diversions that we willingly invite into our lives, whether it's Candy Crush on your phone or porn or whatever it might be. And sometimes we find these no less disturbing than the intrusions because they seem to crowd out other forms of engagement with our surroundings and with other people. But as you said, on this front, there seems to be nobody to blame but ourselves. So what you find instead is people reaching for this notions of self-control. And it seems like strategies for self-regulation are having a renaissance right now that's
right.
Kind of unprecedented. It's not something we associate with consumer capitalism. It sounds like somebody, more in a monastery. But I think we're not going to be able to either kind of liberate or self-regulate our way out of mental fragmentation. I think the remedy, rather, is to become absorbed in some worthy object that has intrinsic appeal and that elicits your involvement in such a way that your mental energies are kind of gathered to a point. And once that's underway, I find it feels more like abandon than self-control. I think the language of eroticism is maybe better suited for parsing it than is the language of asceticism.
I'm speaking with Matthew Crawford. He's author of a new book, The World Beyond Your Head, on becoming an individual in an age of distraction. And what you're talking about sort of reminds me of this concept of flow, which people have talked about, you know, when you're really into something to the point where everything sort of just fades away. And in your book, you examine the workflow and attention spans of people doing a few different professions. They don't sound connected necessarily. You talk about short order cooks, bartenders, glass blowers. What are they doing right, do you think?
Yeah, so consider a bartender. So he gets an order, let's say it's a house of glass red, a mojito, a martini up, and a beer. So what does he do? He lays out the different kinds of glasses that each of those different drinks requires on the bar, and now other orders are coming in at the same time, and he lays out more glasses sort of next to those. And what that means is that both the content of those orders and their sequence is visible at a glance. It's out there in the world, which is good because there's only so much room in his head. And so this is just one example of the way that we can recruit our surroundings to sort of scaffold and support our cognitive abilities rather than tax them unnecessarily.
So how do you think that translates to, you know, sort of off-the-job life? I mean, for a lot of these people, the jobs may be rewarding. Sometimes they're not. But those are jobs. And often when I think of distraction, I think of our time away. It's, you know, it's our recreation time that sometimes we're not using to the fullest.
Yeah, I certainly feel like that. So,
okay, so I'm glad you share this. Pain,
yeah.
At least a little bit.
Absolutely. I don't offer myself as a guru on this stuff. I'm just trying to think through the problem. So one example is, I open a challenging book and I try to read it. And I find that after about a page, I'm drumming my fingers on the table and I'm getting kind of antsy. And then I realize, oh, it's Tuesday night. My favorite TV show is on. And so I turn it on and who knows, maybe this is for the best because the next day I have some basis for chit-chat with other people. I'm not a freak. In grad school, I felt sort of disconnected from the surrounding culture because I was so intensely focused on what I was doing.
Yeah.
And whereas now I like to think I'm kind of hip. But here's the thing. So if I had gotten absorbed in, say, Aristotle last night, my head would still be turning in these spirals of untimely thoughts that would sound strange to my acquaintances. And if my experience is typical, it means that we're becoming more similar to one another. I think there's a large cultural consequence to our ability to concentrate on things that aren't immediately engaging or our lack of that ability, and that is the persistence of intellectual diversity. So I think to insist on the importance of trained powers of concentration is to recognize that independence of thought is a fragile thing and requires certain conditions.
So I guess the idea is a lot of the distractions that we face in life are bringing us to some sort of center, to some sort of sameness?
I think so. I think there's a kind of washing out of human difference because it's in sort of throwing yourself into these demanding practices that aren't immediately engaging that people cultivate their highest powers. Maybe it's practicing the piano. You have to do a lot of mindless repetition of scales to get to the point where you're, you know, expressing yourself on the piano. And the problem is that we're constantly being addressed with these kind of hyper-palatable mental stimuli that make it hard to do that. So there does seem to be a kind of asceticism that's required to get it off the ground, that is, you're becoming skilled in some demanding practice.
Well, one of the parts of your book you talk about is sort of the visual distraction. There's a lot on ads. You know, it's one thing when it's at your home. What do you do when it's in your face? What do you do when you're out
you know, at the grocery store, and you're faced by an ad as you're paying for your groceries, what can you do in that situation?
Well, there's not a whole lot. The cognitive psychologists talk about the orienting response, which is so an animal turns its face and eyes toward the new thing, that whatever appears in your visual field. And this is important in a world of predators, right? It's an important evolutionary adaptation.
Sure.
Well, if you're at the airport with the, you know, TV screens everywhere, there's something new about once every second. And speaking of the airport, there was one time I was, you know, the bottoms of those bins that you place your items in for security screening are now papered with ads.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah, you haven't noticed
that? I haven't
flown
in a couple of years, so.
So one time, I had a flash memory stick in there that was very important. I had a talk on there I was going to have to give in a few hours. Well, and it's about the size of a lipstick, right?
Yeah.
So the bottom of the bin was papered with an ad for lipstick. So there's all these lipsticks, you know, fanned out, and I very nearly missed my my flash memory thing. And so it just made me think, like, who decided to pimp out the security trades with these ads? Like, public space has been just auctioned off in this way. And let me give you another example. I was at the 30th Street station in Pennsylvania. It's this beautiful old train station. But you could see that it was beautiful only by trying to peer around or through these swimming pool-sized banner ads that were hanging up. All these banner ads were for a single enterprise. Apparently, this is called the Station Domination Campaign. So on this occasion, it was for some resort in the Bahamas. And what it felt like is that this I was in a place that was no longer really a place. It was a mere surface on which to display enticements to be somewhere else. And it made me think, doesn't Philadelphia have any pride? Because it really did feel like a public patrimony had simply been sold off. And I think this is connected to a wider sense that politics has been captured by narrow interests that are often commercial in nature. And the very idea of the public is somehow at risk.
Well, Matthew Crawford, it was a pleasure and a relief to be able to pay attention to your book and have this conversation. So thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Matthew Crawford is Senior Fellow at the University of Virginia's Institute for Advanced Studies in Culture and author of the book, The World Beyond Your Head, on Becoming an Individual in an Age of Distraction, which is now out on paperback.